babe, what are you doing? So I think we've got to see these features as very, very, very well entrenched within the royal family itself. Now, as for, I think, you know, the how firm support for the monarchy is in this country, support for the abolition of the monarchy and the establishing of an elected head of state rose by plus 4 percentage points according to a recent poll, and that is due to the Meghan Markle and Oprah interview. However, it's still very low. It's around a quarter of the population, and I think a big part of that is because for most of the country, we've only known the Queen when she's already quite old, and so she's been able to play into these images of almost grandmother of a nation. She also came to the throne in the 1950s when broadcast and television media is still kind of in its infancy, and so she solidified her reign at the same time.
10 seconds, Ash.
As her image was being broadcast into our homes. So the legitimacy crisis, I think it's going to come when Prince Charles ascends to the throne, who's also meddled in one or two political matters which a monarch really shouldn't do.
Ash Sarkar, I want to thank you very much, and we're going to link to your piece, How Harry and Meghan Quit the Royal Family to Join the U.S. Aristocracy. Ash Sarkar, senior editor at Navarra Media, and Tricia Goddard, British journalist and pioneering talk show host. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe, wear a mask. Where to?
Hello, my friends. This is Life During Wartime.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, March 17th at 10 p.m. for Life During Wartime.
Not just a regular Life During Wartime, playing punk and hardcore, having live bands, and letting you know all the underground DIY punk happenings going on in the Portland metro area.
Just because we're different, they have a spaz attack.
This is a celebration marathon. It's from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. It's our 26th year on the air, so we're having a 25th anniversary celebration.
Looking back at the DJs and bands
Life During Wartime
that have made Life During Wartime a punk institution in Portland, at KBOO, and on the World Wide Web.
Celebrate 25 years of Life During Wartime by donating during our anniversary marathon celebration.
On Wednesday, March 17th, from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m.
Here on your community radio station.
KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Friday. Mind that gap, because we're going to bridge it, because girls are powerful. Stay tuned. We run this.
Good morning. Hello, hello. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I am Tammy, and on the line with me is Althea. How are you, Althea?
I'm doing good. We were off last week, and you know, that song really does start your Friday off right. I was very hyped up to hear it again. I've got, you know, Beyonce energy now.
Well, you better keep that energy, because we have definitely a great episode coming up today. Thank you, per usual, always and forever, Sonia, for all of your hard work and for connecting us to the airwaves. Really appreciate all that you do for us.
Yes, and shout out to Beyonce's producer too. That it comes in right the perfect time and just right on the syncopation there, and really gets you moving.
Mm. Nice. We're keeping all these Beyonce energies on the whole hour that we're on. And Althea was right. We were off last week, and we are back on, fully in charge, invigorated, and ready to do the do, as they say, or climb the do, or I don't know, whatever Mountain Dew used to say for their commercials.
I was missing the Mountain Dew reference, but yeah, I think it is.
Well, doing the do has a long history. Back in, I think, the mid-70s, Bobby Bird who was James Brown's hype man, released his own single, Doin' the Do.
You know, hype men is something I'd like, or just like hype people in general. That's what I feel like Beyonce is for us. It's
yes.
hyping us up for the day. And before we get into our... Oh, go, please.
I did one quick Google search, and Do the Do definitely comes up. There's an older one that says, Yahoo, Mountain Dew, it'll tickle your innards.
Yes!
I love that.
I don't know. Is that cautionary?
Watch out!
Yeah.
You're beware the do.
Burning.
Get ready. Something's going to happen to you.
That's like the Four Tops, right? They said, like, in... and I'm a bringing you a love that's true, so get ready.
It's all
your
inner
be tickled.
Full circle.
Indeed.
So we are wrapping up the week. Before I get into our subject, I was wondering for both of y'all if one of you want to share how your week went, any kind of exciting news, any updates, or anything special that you all would like to share. If not, that's cool too.
I mean, I've just been basking in the nice weather that we've been having.
Yeah, that's right.
Loving to see the sun. I love that it's staying light later. Like, I can go for a walk while it's still light out and still be accountable for my job. I love that. Other than that, not a whole lot to report from the home front.
I love that it's getting light earlier.
That too.
Yeah. We are hitting a full... Well, tomorrow will be a full year since Kabu went into COVID mode, I guess. And it was
shut down.
Yeah, it was exactly... exactly a year ago tomorrow that is when we were lastly in station. And a lot of feelings and emotions are you know, sprout from that, but... It doesn't feel like it's been a year, but it truly has been. So just wanted to recognize that, and I don't know if it's coronaversary or what, but we're still here. You know, the community's still here, KBOO's still here, and super stoked that, you know, we're able to keep on keeping on, doing the do and keep on keeping on. So that's kind of where my head
is. I was going to suggest that maybe we don't give it a name, just on... you know, in the hopes that we don't have to use that word again, coronaversary.
I definitely agree with you.
It both feels like it's been a year and like it's been 2 years. Time is, I feel like I've kind of seen behind the mask of what time is all about. I'm like, is that really it? I don't know.
It's a convenient fiction.
It doesn't matter, just in it.
It's a convenient, oh, I love that. I'm putting that on the episode page. Time is a convenient fiction.
Well, just like money, you know, and finance of all sorts. It's a story we tell each other to make it easier to do the things that we have decided are important to do. And that's why we can decide to just take the real to kind of... Poverty is a choice. Not of the inequality, I should say, is a choice. You know, the people who decide these things decide to create inequality and or decide not to create equality. These are all choices we're making. And, you know, the people in whom we have chosen to invest with the authority to wield our power on our behalf are making choices that aren't necessarily in our interests, and we are choosing to let them so far.
Well, that's a good pivot point to our first conversation. See, Tony, you're always bringing it back. I love it. So last week, earlier this week, I guess it's a two-parter and a one-parter. Earlier this week, there was a interview done with Oprah conducting an interview with Meghan Markle and her husband, and the internet was buzzing afterwards. There was a lot of interesting things that came out during the interview, and there was a lot of conversation that took place after that. And then, however, last week, there was a bit of a scandal that came out, which now we know was a complete smear job, as in where Commissioner Joanne Hardisty was accused of a hit and run, when now we know that that was not the case at all, although the Oregonian did report that that it was a real incident that happened, and on top of it, they also published just fake news. And we do have a piece of audio just to start off to hear Commissioner Hardisty talk about this situation the day after she was first accused. Mind you that at this point of the audio that we're about to air, she was not contacted by the police department. She was only contacted by the media asking her to confirm the allegations. So this audio that we're about to play right now is from the Oregon Live, and it's an interview that was conducted March 4th, a day after Commissioner Joanne Hardisty was falsely accused of a hit and run. Sonia, we got that clip ready?
There is an accusation that threatens to damage my reputation as a city council member and as the transportation commissioner. I take these allegations very seriously and am here today to tell you that the allegations are false. I have not driven my car in the last 24 hours. In fact, my car is inoperable because of an unlatched door and has been sitting in the same parking spot for about 6 months. As you all know, I use Lyft when I'm going somewhere I can't walk. And let me just say how well that's turned out. You can ask my neighbors and they will tell you that my car hasn't. In fact, I've become an avid pedestrian since COVID-19 pandemic began. I also have not been contacted by Portland Police Bureau regarding any incident. Portlanders know that I am an open book. I'm human, and sometimes I make mistakes. And when I have screwed up in the past, I've owned it, I've apologized, and I've taken responsibility. I'm telling you today, these allegations are false. And to be frank, these allegations are very suspicious. This appears to be part of a coordinated spear campaign perpetrated by Jeff Reynolds, former chair of the Multnomah County Republican Party and right-wing media personality, as well as the Coalition to Save Portland, who Reynolds credits as breaking this alleged story. We have seen fringe right-wing media already running wild with this false story. And this is an attempt to make a story where no story exists. That's why I felt it was necessary to contact the media and have this conversation directly. When you have taken on police accountability issues as long as I have, you come to expect these kind of attacks. I've experienced them in the past, and I expect I will continue to experience them in the future.
So that was Commissioner Joanne Hardisty talking on the false accusations of her being involved in a hit and run on March 3rd. So as we were saying before, this was an unfounded allegation, total smear campaign, as we know now, days later. Now, I did start off talking about the Oprah interviewing Meghan Markle, and some of y'all might be wondering, what is the connection? Well, Althea, you so graciously, beautifully phrased it in one phrase, basically, where you said, anti-blackness makes these fake news believable. And I just wanted to take a little bit of time to unpack it and just get some responses. I Althea, would you like to start, or any thoughts that are coming through your head after hearing that?
Yeah, well, I think just to add a couple things to what you've already said, some of the big takeaways from the Meghan Markle interview with Oprah had to do with the way that she was treated and lambasted by the British press. And, like, British tabloids are way meaner than American ones, but so much of her criticism was, one, ridiculous, and two, pretty clearly, like, racially motivated. To connect that to the Jillian Hardesty situation and how that all played out, the point of my ire really is the Oregonian, because what happened was that there was a hit and run that happened, and whoever was the driver who was hit racially profiled whoever did it and said that it was Jillian Hardesty. So the Portland police had on an internal file that was maybe a person of interest in this traffic accident. Somehow that got leaked out to a right-wing Facebook page run by the former head of the Multnomah County GOP. Andy Ngo runs with it, and the Oregonian also publishes it without corroborating that it happened, and that, you know, at its root, this is an erroneous claim that has nothing to do with Commissioner Hardesty and is really damaging. It's damaging because even though Hardesty can very confidently debunk this, she hasn't been driving for the past 6 months. There's absolutely no way that it's her. There is this aspect of why was it so believable in the first place? And that, you know, if you're somebody who hears, like, oh, Commissioner Hardesty is a person of interest in a hit and run, and you don't follow up with that story to hear that it's been debunked in these ways, or, like, there's so many points along the way where this falsehood is, like, perpetuated again and again. And the Oregonian issued an explanation, but they didn't apologize, which I think is kind of messed up. Because
I wouldn't call that necessarily an explanation. It's just words.
Well, I didn't say it was a good explanation. But they talk about, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, we got confirmation from the police that that was what it was, which, you know, word to the wise, police are not, like, necessarily the most reliable source. I'll just say that. They've been known to say things that aren't true. So having the police as a source on their own is not enough. But there's this line. Tammy, do you want to read the line that you want to read from the
yeah.
editorial apology, or I can read it if you want?
I'm very glad that I already have it whipped out, because I...
Okay, do it.
You're just so ridiculous. Teresa Bottomley did write a letter from the editor earlier last week, I believe, and this is a direct quote that I'm reading. It's tempting to wash our hands of it and say, we simply did our jobs as journalists. But I'm left with a discomforting question. Since we know Black people are often victims of racial profiling and mistaken identity, do we have an obligation to dig deeper into the underlying incident? Did we need to know more about what the police really knew? Teresa, I'm going to go ahead and say yes and yes. It's just unbelievable that you're asking this question and you have the answer to what you're asking in the first. It's just complete nonsense. And I'm sorry, I'm just getting so riled up just from reading that paragraph. My heartbeat is beating so fast. After all that we've gone through this summer with all the stuff that you've been reporting on, that all of us have been reporting on, this is the first chance that you have to actually, like, all the hashtags say, protect Black women, stand for Black. The first time that you have a chance to show that Black lives really matter, this is what you do. You decide to go with an article that Andy Ngo went with? What does that say about you? Like, that makes no... It makes no sense to me. And I want to know... And you're asking all of these questions, Bottomley. I want to know, how many more Black people need to suffer for these type of institutions to, quote-unquote, learn from their mistakes? How many? This is a city that's known to have an issue with people of color, with Black people specifically, and now you have a black woman in a black woman in power who is trying to gain some accountability from the police, and you are sitting here being, what are you doing? What did you do with that article? You just, in the age of misinformation and disinformation, this is what you choose to do? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, at least the right-wing blogs, you know, there's a clear agenda, you know? So I'm not even, you know, I can understand why, you know, they're standing but what, you know, what they are. And, you know, so I don't put it past them. But if you
right, the Oregonian can be way more damaging because it doesn't, like, it just amplifies it without
on it.
Agenda.
Exactly. It almost legitimizes it. Amplifying fake news. That's what you did to Risa Bottomley. That's where I'm at with that.
You mentioned...
Right, and even if it's... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Sonia, please.
Tammy, you mentioned that, like, her question contains, like... The answer to the question is contained in, and where my mind went was, it's the answer to the questions to those questions are contained in the first principles of journalism, you know, is that should we have dug deeper? Well, yes, you know, it's
yes,
that's what
definitely.
You do. You don't take one source's word for anything. You know, you get multiple sources and see where they line up and see where they don't line up, and you investigate that. That's the purpose. That's your job. And it's like, it's like saying like, oh, this is, it's like they're treating it. See, this is, this is begging the question, right? And it's like, they're treating this as if these are questions and not, you know, fully established, you know, and we have,
yeah, the question marks are really confusing to me. Did we have an obligation to dig deeper into the underlying incident? How is that a question? That's, like you said, that's your job. Black people are often victims of racial profiling and mistaken identity. How are you going to start that sentence off and then put a question mark at the end of that, asking if you should have dug deeper because of that? Like, it's infuriating. And like you said, Althea, the word sorry, accountability, responsibility is not there. It is not there.
Yeah, there's not even a moment where it's like, yeah, we should have done that and we didn't. Or even, you know, you could, I think that given what this letter, you know, said, even a sort of hollow apology in the vein of, oh, we're sorry for the impact that it caused. We're not sorry for writing the story because of X, Y, and Z reason. I think even that would have an impact, because, you know, even if your story is Hardesty denies involvement in hit and run, you know, the key parts of that you remember are Hardesty and hit and run, not denies. And one of, like,
exactly.
not to bring in the Society of Professional Journalists, but one of, like, the, in terms of, like, journalistic ethics, one of the four is to minimize harm. And you didn't do that in this case.
And it's beyond, like, not minimizing harm. You've caused harm onto a person that has, first of all, a person who already, this isn't the first time, you know, like Commissioner Joanne Hardesty said in the audio, this isn't the first time, and this is not the last time, you know? And so to have an institution like the Oregonian kind of, like, show their cards, you know, show where they're, not where their loyalty lies, but, like, where, what they're willing to write, what they're willing to publish. And I get that mistakes happen, especially in the world of 24-hour news cycle, of Twitter, of sound bites, of retweets. I totally get it. Mistakes happen. We're all human. But this is where that part, like you said, you realize that you made a mistake and that it had a repercussion, that it has an impact, and yet you still don't apologize for the impact. A person that's on top of it is the commissioner of the transportation. You know, like, this is just not a good look for someone who is, like, leading transportation in the city to be involved in a hit and run. It's just bad after bad after bad. And to not realize, like, how layered this is, and to just go out and publish this without, with what, Andy No pretty much being the person. You're like the most,
From what I gather from this article, like, I think they didn't go directly to like the right wing stuff, but I think people who had heard the right wing stuff told them, they connected with the police confirmed it, and that, so like the looping into where the right wing site got the information, like maybe the Oregonian didn't know that, but it doesn't excuse it. And because you ended up amplifying this message, and what is the harm in saying that you're sorry and that you were wrong? There's no,
well, because they'll never apologize to a black woman. That's why. Why would they apologize to, I mean, black people haven't, no one's apologized for the years and years and decades of oppression, of segregation, of demotions, of not believing, of lying on, of like using, I mean, of enslaving. I mean, no one said sorry this far, you know? So it's really, and I just want to shout out the Willamette Weekly the Willamette Week for this article, because they really dug in deep, and I really, there's really some great pieces of journalism that they do there, and this is just so important.
Do you want to give the title of the article?
Definitely. There is a couple ones. The ones that we are specifically talking about is titled "Someone in Law Enforcement Leaked False Information About Commissioner Joanne Hardesty to Her Adversaries," and it was published on the 10th by Tess Risky.
I'll link it in our show notes.
Yes.
Sonia?
So that
you want to chime in?
Yeah,
Sonia,
please.
Yeah, I want to talk about, you mentioned like even everything we've been through last spring and summer and through the autumn as well, with Black Lives Matter and all that. And I can hear you. I know people are thinking, dude, This is just a bad report. No one's life was in danger. I want to call back to an earlier quote. I think it was in connection with the Markle and Oprah and Harry interview. It said, "Anti-blackness made the story seem credible," and this whole thing is fueled by and feeds into anti-blackness, and it was anti-blackness that made it seem reasonable to shoot Tamir Rice within seconds of police arriving. Anti-blackness made it seem reasonable to shoot the young black father who was holding a packaged BB gun in Walmart. You know, this all feeds in, and it supports and perpetuates and reinforces a worldview that pits black people as dangerous, as inherently dangerous. Even a 12-year-old child is seen as an imminent threat to everyone around, and makes it seem reasonable, because of anti-blackness, to murder him within seconds of arriving, without making any attempt to assess a situation, to convince him to put down his what they claimed they thought was an actual weapon, and they probably actually perceived a dangerous weapon in the hands of this child because of anti-blackness, because he was black. Anything having to do with him, they saw as a threat, because of anti-blackness. And that's what this all feeds into and supports.
Thank you, Sonia. I thank you so much for that. I was in a group online with some ladies from across the pond, and they were talking about, actually they're talking about the American reaction of the Oprah interview, and they were site and just kind of ask them, like, well, how, you know, what's your perception of what happened, and, you know, what do you think, and is it, you know, do you feel like she did experience anti-Semitic censorship? And they said absolutely, and they gave an example of how they would have articles of who's the other American woman who got into the royal family, Catherine or Kate? I think Kate.
I know it's not Kate. I'll look it up. I know what you're talking about.
And so she another American woman who is now part of the royal family. And when she was pregnant, they had you know, all these pictures of her being, you know, talking about how she has the angelic glow, and, you know, with her hand over the stomach. And they're saying that when Meghan was pregnant, the tabloid pictures would just ask, like, why is she looking like this, as opposed to an angelic glow? Or why?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you are talking about you are talking about Kate, but she's not American. She's married Prince William. Continue.
Is she a commoner?
Yeah.
Was that the question? Was that the deal? Is that what was supposedly noteworthy?
Let's have my mom call in. She definitely knows.
But that was their beef. That was kind of like, how come when this you know, this white lady gets pregnant, she's angelic and can't stop touching her belly because she's so excited to be a mother? But when, and Meghan isn't, like, I'm black, you know, I'm chocolatey, chocolate black. Meghan, she can pass, you know what I mean? Not very easily, but she's mixed race, and she's definitely, I'm not trying to, you know, say she's not black or anything, God forbid. She definitely is. She definitely experienced anti-blackness. But the fact that even when you are a half-black woman, half-black, and you are still in a you're living in a cat, still you'll experience anti-blackness. You know, you can be a millionaire and still experience anti-blackness from someone who is in the royal family, from someone who is a commissioner, a city elected commissioner. Being black is going to cause anti-blackness. It's something that you're going to experience. So how can us regular people, common black folks, how can we, I mean, if we see this people that, I mean, they worked their whole, you know, at least Commissioner Hardesty, you know, worked her whole life to climb up the, you know, the ladder, and, you know, from being a kid to running for office and all this stuff. She did so much, and yet still, to help the city, to uplift disenfranchised voices, to get police accountability for not just black people, for all people that have suffered, all of us that have suffered, and yet still. So for me, Tammy, to Teresa Bottomley, just what's up, man? You messed up, and I am personally kind of mad at you, but that's just me and my opinion.
I would like to see an apology.
I would love to see an apology. I know that I would love to see an apology from a real apology that doesn't ask really just dumb questions. Teresa, you know the answer. Yes, you should have done a better job. Yes, the racial profiling exists. Like, if I dyed my hair white, put on some, and you know, had some dreads, would this, people start saying that I'm Commissioner Hardesty doing things? Is that all that it takes? Come on now. And this is, it just, yeah, it's just so textbook. And, like, you must be so out of touch to think that, to not dig deeper. Like, do you not know that this is a person has been trying to hold the police accountable for years, and just now we're starting to get real change made, and you're just going to take its face value from a one-sided story and just be like, yeah, this makes sense. And it doesn't make sense. And the word that she used with the feeling discomfort, it's because you did something racist, 110%. That discomfort you're feeling is the anti-blackness that you are perpetuating, and that whole letter that you sent was nothing but white fragility and white tears, and I'm not here for it. Not here for it. It's silly stuff. It makes no sense, and the city isn't having it. The city is not having it.
Yeah. The letter that they wrote in response has a lot of, it's like they're describing it but it happened at arm's length. It's like, oh, this is something that actually happened, like, you know, somewhere 20 minutes from here. This didn't happen to us. Hypothetically,
yeah,
what went wrong?
removed and detached, as though you're trying to tell a story, that you didn't really have a part in, or you're infantilizing yourself. You say, oh, I didn't know any better. You did know better. You did.
Yeah.
And you do.
Can I say one thing? Just about, like, you know, trust in media is already really low, and events like this, one, bad, degrade that trust. Two, not apologizing for it, not taking responsibility for impact, degrades that even further. Trust in media, which is important because, you know, we need to know what's going on. Otherwise, we're all going to be turning to the right-wing blogs to find out what the heck is going on.
I really hope that they figure out a way to make this up in a way that is believable, that has just as much impact as the problem that they caused, or the misinformation that they disseminated or propagated, whatever adjectives you want to use. But yes, I'm very glad that her name is cleared. Joanne Hardesty's name is cleared. There was not a hit and run that she was part of. And and I'm living in the age that we are in with social media and everything. I hope that her name gets clear. Her name, you know, like you said, the impact lasts as long as the issue. So, yes, thank you so much for having this conversation, because it's a really hard one. And I know that Joanne Hardesty is definitely a part of KBOO, has been for a long time. So. I'm sending you all the best wishes, and I hope that you're doing well, and I hope that you have a good weekend. That's me. That's all me, and I'm done for this part.
We ready to pivot?
We are ready to pivot.
All right.
We do have a song, and this is The Gap. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes, and here we are.
Welcome
back to KBOO. Thank you. That was Dad, who are no longer together, but still in our hearts and souls. They're not dead or anything. They just broke up. So that, just in case you got worried. And we are swimming or diving into our part two. Althea, please introduce if you could.
Yeah, we're gonna go to a TikTok watch, which will explain where we're going with this. Sonia, you got the TikTok watch ready?
Here we are.
This is TikTok Watch with the GAP hosts, Althea Billing and Tammy Heptias.
And Engineer Sonia.
We're talking about generations, specifically Gen Z and millennials. The reason I want to talk about that today is if you're unaware, there is a war going on between Gen Z and millennials. Pick your side and get ready to fight. Skinny jeans, side parts in your hair, Harry Potter. These are the pressing issues of our time. What are we doing?
Hey Gen Z, you can suck it. You can't tell me what to wear. 'Cause I've been rocking this side part since you had Kermit on your underwear. So cute. And you can pry these skinny jeans from my cold dead ass. You hear? So Gen Z, you can suck it. You can't tell me what to wear. Oh, you guys look grumpy. You should take a nap.
What? Gen Z's trying to what? Cancel Eminem. Gen Z's trying to cancel Eminem? Honey, that's cute. Listen, little kiddies, let me make this quite clear. This man was around even before you were here. So what, you're all mad because the man was a lyricist while all your rappers are mumbling gibberish? No, go ahead and shut your mouth. Better yet, go and sit your time out because boy was running laps even before you could walk. Hell, boy was spitting bars even before you could talk. So no, afraid you're null and void, dear. I'm afraid your opinion don't matter here because one day you'll grow up and see how everyone went and forgot about Z.
Gen Z will never know what it's like to use dial-up internet. Okay, I'll also never know what it's like to send a telegram. What's your point? Gen Z will never know what it's like to rewind a VHS tape. I had a VCR as a kid. You'll never know what it's like to text on a flip phone. Actually, I could probably text faster with T9 than I could with a smartphone. Oh, I bet you never heard of Nirvana. Are you okay?
You have a group of people that grew up on the internet, but for the first time are starting to feel old on a social media app, which is an experience they've never had before. They quite literally grew up alongside the internet and had MySpace, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything. So now that they're entering an app like TikTok, where I'm sure they just expected the typical experience they have when they enter any kind of platform, but now we're kind of surrounded by all of these young people calling them old, it's probably a different and weird experience and has probably led them to be a bit more territorial over a lot of things.
So that was TikTok Watch. As you can hear, there is something of a generational war going on TikTok these days. It's not, you know, boomers and millennials battling it out in the headlines. It's played out. It's over. We don't care anymore. But now there is combativeness between millennials, which are, I think, birth years of like 1980 to 1996. Versus Gen Z, which is like 96 to, I want to say like 2005 or something like that. And so we're going to talk more about that, but that brings us to our question. We want to know from you, the audience, when did you first experience a generational gap? Because this is happening for some people newly right now. When did you first gap? Hello, this title of the show. When did you first feel a generational shift? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Credits in the TikTok Watch go to @CassieSmith607 on TikTok, Eddie Burback, and Casey Alonso on YouTube as well.
I would say
I feel so red right now. I have my skinny joggers on with my side part. I have the office on cue with my Eminem CD in the CD player.
Yeah,
feel very
red. I was talking about my Hogwarts house this morning.
I never got into the Harry Potter, but
that's
I was
good.
I'm a true blood millennial. I would love to hear from audience members, from listeners, 503-231-8187. When did you start feeling the generational shift? This is fantastic. And also, full disclosure, I'm a millennial. I guess Althea, you are a Zoomer.
I'm kind of in between, you could say.
That's a very Gen Z thing to say.
But it is. Okay, sorry. But I, like, also experience skinny jeans, and I have a side part. So, like, you know. the last Harry Potter book came out on my birthday when I was like 13. So, like, I mean, here's the thing. Well, let me say one thing. Generations are made up.
Mm. Yes.
You start picking at the categories, and you're like, wait, you mean there isn't every 10 years, like, everything is totally different and no one has any overlap? What?
A new season. Sonia, you have any, if you have anything you'd like to contribute, but you might be on the phone, so it's okay if you don't.
Well, I was just thinking, parentheses, chuckles bitterly in Gen X.
Yeah, Gen X aren't getting...
I was already in grade school by the time the children you're talking about were born.
The children. Well, we're grown adults now, and we're having fights on the internet with each other.
Yeah.
It reminds me of... I was just reading... a friend of a friend has been using his Twitch channel to read to us since last April. We've been going through mostly Tolkien, and we're about halfway through The Two Towers now. And and Legolas is walking through Fangorn Forest, and he says, "This forest is old. It's like almost I feel young again. The youngest I've felt since traveling with you children," talking to Aragorn and Gimli.
I think okay, that
you children.
My millennial head doesn't fully get it, but I get it.
I have confidence that the reference landed. For not being
gather around, Auntie Sonia, tell you a story.
Yeah. Tell us about your generational gap that you experienced. 503-231-8187. I wanted to point out one kind of silly thing, because it is like the older group of millennials, like it's not the younger ones that are generally so offended by this stuff, but it's like also absolutely ridiculous that you're making a parody song to diss a bunch of mostly teenagers. Parody songs aren't cool anymore. And like, why are you so defensive of Eminem? Weird Al is timeless, but like widespread. I mean, I remember when it was all about parody songs on YouTube. Some of them have replaced the original lyrics in my brain forever, and I have to live with that. But we're past that now. We've moved on.
In the TikTok watch, there's a phrase she used. She said, people are starting to feel old for their first time, which is so interesting. You know, I'd love to hear other people share their moment when they first started, not feel old or just start feeling a generational divide, generational gap, maybe a pop culture gap or something. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. And our lines are open and ready to receive you. Please go ahead.
I think what we've got here is a consequence of a society that has been sold this notion of not just of celebrating youth, and not just celebrating youth, but taking it to the point of maybe selling the idea of celebrating youth by demeaning and denigrating age. This is where our elders don't have, are not honored the way, just aren't honored. It's made difficult and expensive it's become infeasible to keep old people to keep our elders with us, and so we have to kind of shunt them off into care homes because we can't just like support them, and then we kind of like.
Heard it here first. Millennials are headed to care homes.
No. Well, in another 30 years or so. But,
yeah, right.
But, like, there's, what we see is that there's no future. There's no honor. There's no good to being older. And
yeah, the horizon is,
we're told,
is
always
like appealing.
Age, yeah. Defying this, you know, this is, and where we're constantly sold like youth. And so
mm-hmm.
when you become any sign that is slipping away, as it must, unless you die, is stressful.
Yeah.
And so what we see is as people are approaching 30 and or mid 30s, like the millennials did about 5 or 10 years ago, we're getting they start, you know, lashing out.
Yeah. Well, can I point out one thing here? Hmm. I think that millennials obviously have been the subject of a lot of kind of ire from you know, headlines or whatever.
Y'all are just jealous of our avocado toast, please.
Exactly.
Haters.
You ruined the diamond industry, which is not a criticism that lands, but somehow saying, hey, skinny jeans aren't that cool.
Like, I love to rip my pants off of me like they're flesh. What is this? My body doesn't need to breathe. It's crazy. I'll eat my avocado toast, my $15 cafe that I can't afford, an apartment that I can't afford, in a job that I'm going to keep working at all the time because I'm never going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is this, and y'all can keep dancing on your little Tic Tac machine while I eat my avocado toast.
Yeah, do the renegade, huh?
That's what I don't know how to do that. I know the woe, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, hey, trends move fast. It's there's limited return on investing the time to learn whatever TikTok dance is happening at the moment. So, you know,
I think I know.
Be absolved of any of that. And I mean, it's funny that there's like these cultural trends, I guess. I feel like that gives so much credit to skinny jeans that I didn't want to be like, skinny jeans are a cultural moment, but that there
skinny
are
jeans
like
were a cultural moment.
Yeah, I think that they've loosened up a little bit. The ones that were like painted on, and then that aired into jeggings. I think I'm glad that we've moved away from that personally.
I always thought it's interesting how millennials have the skinny jeans, and then like the hippies had the bell bottoms, where they're like kind of like the opposite of one another. And I always said, there's something there. There's something there. Anyways, for our last remaining few minutes, we'd love, love, love to hear from a listener or two about when you first started feeling an age gap between yourself and, I guess, the youth. When did you first start feeling like there was, like, a shift happening? 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you.
We got Tim on the line. Tim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Good. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing well. First time I experienced a generational gap was when I was about 34, after I had returned from 2 years in Paraguay, out in the boonies. And it seemed like, and plus I had been gone 4 years in other places before that. Then I went back home. And all my friends had kids all of a sudden. Everyone had kids, and the kids were half grown up. And everything was different than what it was when I was a kid. And that was the first time I realized, hey, hell, I'm getting old. And I'm a baby boomer. I hope you forgive me. But anyways, second time was when I turned 60. And all of a sudden, I was grandpa. I look like grandpa, and grandkids are all around, and that really made me realize, wow, what a change. But I don't agree that getting old is stressful or that it needs to be stressful. It's all in how you look at it. Getting old is just a natural process that we all want to have, because that means the alternative is death. So of course we want to grow old. The thing is to keep your mind active, your body active, and stay healthy, stay involved in things. Don't let it die. Make yourself feel important, feel good about what you're doing. And when you die, try to have done no harm. Try to have done as much good as you can. Karma builds and will come back. Anyways, that's my comments.
And thank you, Tim.
Love that. Thank you. Well said. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And of course, like my point earlier was not that aging is itself stressful, is that the story that capitalism tells us in order to sell us products by leveraging our instinctive fear of death by linking it with, by connecting it with getting old, and also by selling youth as the ideal and so on. And never is, it's not about there being any kind of inherent stress to being old. It's about being sold a story that says it is.
Right.
Right, yeah. That was beautiful. I really appreciate that, Tim. I forgot about kids. And I guess, yeah, generational shift. It's interesting that he mentioned twice. I'm going to remember that. I got some stuff to look forward to. I appreciate that, Tim.
Yeah, I think it's good to, I mean, it is all in terms of your perspective. And hey, grandkids are great, even if they grow up with iPads. That's Generation Alpha. They're coming.
Man, interesting. We got 5 more minutes. And we have Gordon on the line. How are you, Gordon?
Hi, thanks. So I'm a father of two, and I'm just going into my 50s, and there's a big change. You know, the midlife crisis, it doesn't have to be a crisis. You know, I think going into debt when you're at this age, I think putting yourself in a situation where it becomes a crisis. But if you can manage yourself and stay smart, you don't have to live, you can live an extravaganza, a midlife extravaganza. It doesn't have to be a crisis at all. But really, it goes into going into debt. But you're also dealing with, and here's my issue that I'm having the biggest problem with, is going into older age, is the inconsistency with the healthcare and the ups and downs with, am I going to be good one day, and am I going to not be covered the next day because the conservative right wing doesn't want me to be good because they don't really want me here, but yet they're schizophrenic and they do want me here because they like to make the money off my back. So, you know, so the healthcare issue and the capitalism issue is the crisis, is the problem of inconsistencies and living with stress and wondering if you're going to be covered the next day, or if here's the situation, I went into health, go get my teeth cleaned. And I got half of my mouth got cleaned one day, and then I had to wait a week to clean the other half of my teeth. And it's like, what is that? Because the insurance company didn't want to pay for it for all in one day. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on, man. So really, when we get it down into the brass tacks, it's capitalism that breaks up the society, makes everybody devalued, and then the elderly have no value.
Yes.
And as I become more, that's what they think. That's what they don't have, you know, there is no value.
Mm-hmm.
And there is value, because if you go to the indigenous, if you go to the black community, to the Mexican community, the brown community, they all value their families. They're all in units taking care of each other. And here's the white people walking through town. It's all about me. Screw you. If you can't make it, that's your problem, and I'm going to capitalize on you. Ha ha ha. And that's how we are as a white community. That's how we function in society as a whole. Even though a lot of people like ourselves are more aware and conscious of what's going on. So, yeah, the healthcare and breaking up the family, and then just individualizing people and then dehumanizing them in the process of health and trying to be healthy, because health is wealth. That's the whole thing, is your health is your wealth. And if I don't live very well when I'm 70, I'm glad I live in the right to die state, because I might want to die because I don't want to just live that pain and suffering anymore of that, you know, that thing. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. How do you know?
Appreciate you, Gordon. Think? Yeah, thank you. Definitely there's, go ahead, different infrastructure aspects that can can see that. I like what you said about a midlife extravaganza.
Oh yeah, definitely hashtag midlife extravaganza. And I you know, Thea, when we were talking yesterday, you know, you said something like you went with a friend of yours to a store, like a grocery store, or you were running errands with them, and you were just kind of having fun, not worried about anything. And Gordon brought a really good point, but when you are like younger, right, you don't really have to worry about, you know, excuse me, for some of us do have to worry when they're really young, and it's horrible. Although, like, small kids, you know, they don't think about, unless they have to, about, like, where their food is coming from or paying rent and, you know, stressful things like health insurance or I can only get half of my teeth cleaned because I can't get the other. And I got to admit, Gordon, I definitely felt that when I first realized that, like, things like health insurance, like, what, I can only get half of my teeth cleaned because insurance doesn't want to pay for a whole day? Totally a thing that wakes a person up to see how when you're growing up, you become more embedded in the capitalistic system, and it's difficult to maneuver. We are just about out of time. It's been great talking to everyone. I really wish we could, maybe we'll do a part two of this, because I think we can get some great stories. This has been The Gap. I'm Tammy. With me is Althea and Sonia. And we want to wish you a happy Friday, and take care of yourselves and each other.
Thanks. See you next week.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is hiring a membership director. Our membership director maintains relationships with KBOO members and listeners, create a process to meet or exceed fundraising goals, and manage the membership database. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit KBOO.